The following program was recorded Thursday evening, August the 20th, 2009. Facing the mortgage crisis, the next steps. On location at the Cox, Ohio Media Center in downtown Dayton.
Good evening. I'm Kevin Riley, editor of the Dayton Daily News. I'd like to welcome you here and also welcome our broadcast audience. This program is a partnership between the Dayton Daily News, Think TV, and WYSO Public Radio. It's made possible in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and with assistance from the Ohio Channel. We have a demanding task tonight that revolves around two questions that are of great concern to the Dayton region. Those questions involve foreclosure, mortgage problems, and struggling neighborhoods. The questions are, what can be done to help individuals, and what can be done to help neighborhoods? We hope to find some answers and to identify steps that we can take, you, me, our leaders, all of us, as we try to ease the economic problems in our community. These problems can be seen in abandoned houses, neighborhoods in decline, and in a public perception that harms our community's reputation. Let's introduce our guest panel. Dan Foley is president of the Montgomery County Commission. He's been a commissioner since January 2007. Before that, he was the county's clerk of courts. Alfred Patterson is a lifelong resident of Montgomery County and a community outreach specialist for County Corp and its local Home Saver program. Bill Faith is the executive director of the Coalition for Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. I'd also like to introduce our media representatives. Both of them have reported extensively on the foreclosure crisis. Emily McCord from WYSO and Ken McCall of the Dayton Daily News. Here's our format tonight. I'll ask our panelists a question. Each will give a two-minute answer. We'll then hear from citizens about their personal situations, and our reporters will ask questions of our panel. We're aiming for an informative discussion. We'll have time for questions from our audience here. Now the first question for our panel. What is your organization doing to help individuals and neighborhoods affected by the mortgage crisis? First, Mr. Foley.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm very pleased to be here to talk about this subject. What we're doing, I think, is really a reflection of the problem, and that is that it's multi-tiered. At the local level, we have worked with partners to start a 2-1-1 initiative with United Way, where we're trying to get individuals to reach out early when they're in trouble financially with their mortgage. We're also supportive of regulation at the state level. I know Bill Faith, who is covers state legislative issues of mortgage issues, is going to talk about this a lot. But we've been supportive of legislation at the state level that will essentially put more regulation on the mortgage industry and also more protection for homeowners. And I hope tonight that we get to talk a lot about the fact that at the national level, at the federal level, there is there's so much work to be done around this issue. And I tell you that as a county commissioner, as an elected official, as a citizen who has seen this issue pretty close, the solutions with this problem lie, I think, most with the federal level and the entire federal system about how we have around mortgages and our financial lack of regulation around this issue.
Thank you. Dan Foley, Montgomery County Commissioner. Next, Mr. Patterson.
Good evening. Good to be here. Thank you. And I'd like to say good evening to everyone here. County Corp's Home Saver program actually has two issues that we try to address. One is prevention. The other is intervention. On the prevention side, our organization's agenda is to get to folks before there's a problem. And we do that by trying to identify those homeowners that have high-risk mortgages. We want to make them aware of their options, make sure they understand the risk that's associated with their current mortgage, and then help them decide what's the best way to address it. On the intervention side, we want to address those folks who have already found it difficult to meet their mortgage payments or, in some cases, are actually facing foreclosure. These folks need options. They need help. They need to know how the system works for them as opposed to against them. They also need to know what resources are available in Montgomery County. We want to make sure that those resources are available to them, and we help navigate through the process, because it can be intimidating. It can be overwhelming. So we try to bring all of the county's resources to the problem on a grassroots level, actually help the homeowners directly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. And he is with the is a community outreach specialist for the Local Home Saver program. Next, Bill Faith, who is executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. My organization has worked on this issue for many years. As people may be aware, the foreclosure crisis is nothing new to the state of Ohio. In fact, in each of the last 14 years, we've had a new record level of foreclosures. And it's really due in part, I think Commissioner Foley said it well, it's been a neglect at the policy level. The federal regulators did not stop the lenders who issued reckless, unaffordable loans to many of our citizens. Subprime lending was rampant in our state, and it ruined the credit and the financial underpinnings of many of our citizens. These things could have been prevented and reined in and much more strictly regulated. But our federal regulators and our state did too little too late to address this issue. So what we try to do is to advocate for change at those levels, particularly at the state level, but also at the national level, so that we have better regulation and more protections for our homeowners.
Thank you. And that was Bill Faith of Ohio's Coalition on Homelessness and Housing. Now I'll ask one of our citizens to present their story. This is Steve Pittman. He lives on Grange Hall Road in Greene County. Mr. Pittman.
My name is Steve Pittman, and I live in Beaver Creek at 1492 Grange Hall Road, my home for 30 years and where I've raised my family. I first purchased my home in 1979 for $49,500. The house now sits next to a bike path, but at one time when my daughter was younger, it was a railroad corridor. We used to run out and greet with the engineers, train engineers, as the trains would come to a stop on their way up towards Xenia, not being able to get up the hill with a single engine. I fell behind two payments on my mortgage after getting laid off from Time Warner Cable. So I called Wells Fargo. They placed me on a forbearance plan where I paid a higher monthly payment to catch up for 3 months, and then was told that I would be eligible for a loan modification. I made those payments faithfully and on time. They told me that a modification had been approved after calling them after the 3 months, and added that my temporary fixed anniversary date for my loan was up, and my loan was going to be readjusted from 6.75% to 9.75%. The Wells Fargo representative told me that the loan modification was in process and that it would be mailed to me for signatures. He stated further that my first payment wouldn't be due for 3 months. Well, I never received any of the paperwork, and the representative could no longer be reached. I kept calling until finally a new representative was assigned, and again we made arrangements over the phone. The day after speaking with the new representative, the sheriff showed up at my door with foreclosure papers. In trouble, I contacted the Save Your Dream Foundation here in Dayton, and they assigned me with an attorney here for the Advocates for Basic Legal Equality. Since then, many promises have been made by Wells Fargo, but none of them kept. I've been denied a loan modification, even as Wells Fargo has signed up for the Home Affordable Modification Program, or HAMP. Between the time that I first called my lender and now, the interest, foreclosure costs, and other expenses, some of which have not been explained, have inflated the balance with additional charges that have consumed all equity that I had in my home. I have a good job now, working for DirecTV, and I've proven that I can afford my mortgage. They still say no. In fact, 5 times they've said no. I've written to our congressman. I've written to the White House, and that's why I'm here tonight. I do not know where to turn next, but I do know that I'm not going to leave my home at 1492 Grange Hall Road. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pittman. We all appreciate your candor and willingness to tell such a difficult story. It helps the rest of us understand what happens to people who get caught up in this crisis. Emily McCord of WYSO will ask the first question of our panel as a follow-up to Mr. Pittman's story. Emily?
Obviously, in Mr. Pittman's case, there's a lot of different issues going on right now, but I would like to direct my first question to Mr. Faith. He's in a situation where he is trying to get himself back on his feet, and he's trying to modify his loan, but at the same time, this foreclosure process is still going on, and his debts are mounting up from it. I understand there's a bill in the House right now that's aiming to put a moratorium on foreclosures for a six-month period. And Mr. Faith, I'd like to ask you, what is House Bill 3? How will it help people like Mr. Pittman? And who's supporting the bill?
Well, it's a great question. And I'll tell you, what Mr. Pittman is experiencing is being experienced by thousands of people in our state today. And that is, their loans ended up with a mortgage servicer. It's not the bank you went to when you originally got your loan. It was sold off, ended up, and Wells Fargo is one of the big ones, but there's many other big national players that are servicers. They actually are paid to do two things, and really only two things: collect payments and foreclose. They don't have a financial incentive to do the loan modification that Mr. Pittman needs. And there's a disconnect between how they're incentivized and what the homeowners need to remain in their homes. And even in Mr. Pittman's case, where he could afford a reasonable payment, that's what he needs. He needs a loan modification. So one of the things that House Bill 3 that's currently pending in the legislature would do would be to regulate these servicers. They're essentially unregulated by anyone at this point. Not at the federal level, and certainly not at the state level. Many other states have passed regulation on servicers, and they hold them to account when it comes to working diligently with homeowners where it's viable. We're not asking them to perform miracles, but where it's viable, they should do loan workouts and modifications with homeowners. Regulating servicers and putting them under more scrutiny by through a government agency would help to achieve what Mr. Pittman needs in the long run. The other things the bill would do would be to help provide funding by putting a fee on the servicer to file the foreclosure. So it provides a disincentive to file, but that funding would be used to help fund foreclosure prevention counseling, organizations that are providing legal assistance like ABLE, other groups that will help homeowners, such as the Miami Valley Fair Housing Center, County Corps program. Others could benefit from the funding that's derived from the fee. So it accomplishes two things: a bit of a different disincentive, and provides needed funding. The other thing we have to realize is that foreclosures cost us all. It doesn't just cost people like Mr. Pittman. I mean, it costs everybody, because property values decline when foreclosures occur. In fact, there's been research that shows on an average foreclosure, home values by the neighbors go down $3,000. And our values are declining as a state. We're now, I think in the last 12 months, we've seen about a 6% decline in our property values. So that's causing many other homeowners to get close to or actually underwater with their mortgage, meaning they own more on their home than their home is worth. That now affects 1.1 million Ohio mortgage holders. This is a big problem, and it costs everybody. I know Dan could tell you what it costs county government, what it costs local government to deal with boarded up houses and all the crime and vandalism that occurs when properties are left vacant. So House Bill 3 is a common sense solution that's already cleared the Ohio House and is currently pending in the Senate. It's been pending in the Senate for months. They've yet to hold one hearing on the bill. So we're pushing for stronger action once the legislature reconvenes after Labor Day.
Well, thank you, Bill Faith of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Commissioner Foley, can you talk a little bit about what it costs county government? I mean, not necessarily the dollar figures, and I think that you know a little bit about this bill as well. So,
I do. I have a relative in the business in this one, actually. So my brother, Mike, is a state representative, and it's he's the main sponsor of House Bill 3. And I support it, and my peers on the county commission support that bill as well. I think the cost is numerous. And Bill Faith made the point that this is not a new issue. I previously served as the clerk of courts for Montgomery County. And I printed out the statistics today. In 1997, we had 1,319 foreclosure cases. In 2008, we had 5,194. So that's almost a 300% increase in 11 years. So what's the cost? Well, it's obviously there are many reasons for foreclosures. There's job loss. Somebody may have gotten a divorce. Somebody may have had a medical bill that was just so great that they couldn't pay for anything else. They might have made some reckless financial decisions. Predatory lending. We know that that's happened in this community. There could be property flipping. So there's many reasons for these foreclosure cases. We know that. But if you go through neighborhoods in Dayton, you go through the Santa Clara neighborhood off North Main Street, that neighborhood has just been decimated by mortgage foreclosures. I mean, that neighborhood was once a beautiful neighborhood, right? And it's not anymore, unfortunately. And so... So for the same reason that there's many reasons why these foreclosure cases happen, we have to look at the solutions as multi-tiered as well. And so I think tonight in this audience, in this room, you see many people who are, you know, there's a lot of local people who are helping on this, Miami Valley Fair Housing. We've got, people from the state, from the Attorney General's office. We've got folks who are with ABLE, with, you know, legal representation. I want to say this because this community has been working on this issue now for well over 10 years, and we've been doing a lot. I mean, people have been working very, very hard on this issue. But the frustrating part is, and I might sound like a broken record tonight, unless we get strong federal action, we're going to continue to spin our wheels, unfortunately. And some of the solutions are, you know, we obviously need a better economy. We need more financial education. But I really, in my heart, believe that this federal response is something that I think is starting to come, but it's not there yet. So,
thank you, Montgomery County Commissioner Dan Foley. Ken McCall of the Dayton Daily News, a question for our panel.
Yeah, I want to talk about that federal response a little bit. So my question is to Mr. Patterson. The Obama administration's Making Home Affordable program is supposed to give lenders an incentive to do workouts on some of these loans, and yet sources I've talked to are saying not much is happening. From your experience, is the program working?
From my experience, the program does work, but you have to work it. And that's where, the devil's in the details. But first, I'd like to say that I do agree wholeheartedly with both Bill and Dan. Their comments really strike home. But when it comes to the Making Home Affordable program, in theory, the program is a good one. It's well put together, and it tried to address the issues that everyone has to deal with when dealing with foreclosure. However, in practice, we have to recognize that certain aspects of the program were actually developed by the same servicers that Bill discussed in his previous answer. So you almost have the fox in the hen house, so to speak. Now, the program can work if, in fact, those folks that are working the program recognize a couple of simple things. Well, not so simple, but a couple of things. One, the services that Bill talked about are usually subsidiaries, are in some way connected with banks and other financial institutions. So they act and think as banks act and think. That means they're motivated by profit. And those profits are usually written into the contractual agreements that they have with whatever institution they're servicing for. So you have to recognize that to the servicer, once the fees have been earned, the only way to collect their money is through foreclosure. There's really no vehicle for them to collect their fees once they've advanced money for property taxes and insurances and attorneys and all the other stuff that goes into trying to get you to pay a mortgage that you can't pay anymore. So their motivation is to foreclose. And because they understood this when the legislation was, or when the Making Home Affordable initiative was developed, there are certain aspects of it that reflect their goals, not necessarily the intent of the program. But when you take it all apart, you realize that there's some very biased language in it that allows lenders who publicly have signed agreements with the Treasury Department saying that they will adhere to the concepts and the intent of the program. But in fact, the actual language in their agreements allows them to make choices that are contrary to the intent of the program. Hence, you have a situation where Wells Fargo, who did sign with the Treasury Department, can still deny Mr. Pitts modification when, in fact, to our common sense evaluation, he meets the criteria. So, yeah, the program, it does work, but it is a very involved process to make it work. You really have to be a student of the program. You really have to understand the bank's motivation. And in his case, it may have gotten to the point now where, you know, there are legal attitudes involved because there's attorneys on both sides. And that doesn't necessarily always complicate the issue, but it does change it to some degree. And so now you're in a situation where the bank doesn't, or the servicer doesn't realize what they're going to gain by allowing him to keep the property, because the fees have mounted up. There's so much money owed in this situation, the only way for everyone to get paid is, in fact, to foreclose. What you have to do is to teach the institution that there is a viable alternative. And you have to almost think a little bit like a profit-centered organization. When we approach lenders in situations like that, we try to give them, we try to show them a scenario where they can still make more money by working with a Mr. Pitts than they're going to make by immediately forcing him into foreclosure. At foreclosure, it's a done deal. They make their money. The investor takes a huge loss. Mr. Pitts doesn't have his home. So.
Ken, thank you. Alfred Patterson, Community Outreach Specialist with the Local Home Saver Program. Ken, now it sounds like you have a follow-up.
Just a quick follow-up. Yeah. So do these fees that Mr. Pittman's seeing, is that like a new form of predatory lending?
Yes. However, we have to keep in mind we're dealing with banks. And while, in fact, we all know that banks are a necessary evil, and I don't necessarily mean to cast banks as a terrible thing. I don't want to demonize banks. In this situation, they're often in an adversarial situation with the homeowner. But, yeah, their fees, he indicated that the principal balance on his home has increased significantly because of the fees that have been added to it by the cost of foreclosure and all of the other little things you don't necessarily see and get a chance to fight. So, yeah, it is a form of predatory lending, but we have to recognize that, you know, we as the general public have to take an opportunity when we enter into these contracts, and I mean no disrespect to Mr. Pittman, because remember, this is housing. And in America, everybody has a right to be a homeowner. So we approach it that way. Now, some would say it's not necessarily a right, and sometimes I agree and sometimes I don't. But the point is this. These contracts are indeed contracts. And the financial institutions indicate that they have a right to have their contracts enforced. So part of what Dan was saying is that at some point, and part of what Bill was saying, at some point you have to have judicial and regulatory involvement that makes the things that institutions, financial institutions, are allowed to do improper, in fact, illegal. And then you'll see that your mortgage contract is what you thought it was, and that there was no details that would get you in a situation where your payment would increase significantly, or you'd have a balloon payment, or some other factor that you had no idea was really in your mortgage payment.
Thank you. That was Alfred Patterson of the Community Outreach Specialist for the Local Home Saver Program. And now we have a question from one of our citizens here.
Yes, hi. When I first took my mortgage out years and years ago, I think every mortgage was a fixed-rate mortgage. And the coming of these adjustable-rate mortgages, how much of a problem, what percent of the foreclosures that we have can we directly attribute to the advent of these adjustable-rate mortgages? And along with that, you know, we have a lot of realtors trying to sell and push houses. We have the Miami Valley Fair Housing and other agencies trying to get more people into houses. How much have they encouraged or allowed or even pushed people into getting houses through these adjustable rate mortgages?
Before we answer that question, could you just let us know what your name is?
Oh, Joe Bradford from Beaver Creek.
Thank you. Which one of you wants that question?
I could talk about that somewhat. I mean, if you look at the recent history of foreclosures and you analyze what kind of loans were underneath the foreclosure, in other words, you'll find that your point is absolutely correct. The vast majority of the foreclosures we've seen in the last several years have been on subprime adjustable rate mortgages. I mean, these are loans, as in Mr. Pittman's case, they have a teaser rate up front, meaning come in the door, it's almost like a drug dealer operates. For a while, it's real cheap, and then it's going to get more expensive. But don't worry, we'll get you into another mortgage then, because your property values are always going to go up, and it's real easy to find loans. Well, now property values are actually going down, and it's not so easy to get loans. So people have this sort of payment shock when their rate goes from 6% to 9.75%, even with historically low interest rates. So these subprime adjustable rate mortgages were extremely common 3 to 5 years ago, which is, you know, and within 2, 3, 4 years, those loans have gone bad. Nowadays, we're seeing still a fair share of subprime mortgages going bad. 40-45% of the foreclosures are still on subprime, but we're seeing more prime borrowers fall into foreclosure now. In part, that's due to the unemployment situation. Ohio's rate, I think, is over 11% now on unemployment. And in part, it's due to the decline of property values, the fact that so many homeowners who had a prime mortgage but are now underwater. In other words, they owe more than their home is worth. And that's a big growing problem in our state, as it is in other states. So you're right, but I think the problem's actually gotten more complicated by the fact that we're going through a very difficult recession that's hurting many of our homeowners economically. The other part of your question was, did we go too far of pushing people into homeownership before they were ready? Absolutely. You know, there were people in the Bush administration who were asked, what is the proper homeownership rate for our nation? And they said 100%. I mean, that's just not realistic. Many people prefer or can actually only afford to be a renter. And there's nothing wrong with being a renter. In fact, it may help you. I think many homeowners that pulled the trigger on homeownership wish they had to do it over again.
Thank you. That was Bill Faith, who is executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Commissioner Foley, go ahead.
I think he started his comment out with the fact that, you know, the loan that he took out in his house was understandable and a bit more simple. And I think one of the things that I've been reading a bit more about is that is this concept of a plain vanilla mortgage. That if you are a consumer who wants to get a loan and you don't want to expose yourself to a lot of risk, that this concept could apply to somebody who might want to fit into that. If you said, well, I want to expose myself to a little bit more of a different product, then the system should be allowed to let you have those options. But if you, again, don't want to be exposed to that risk, it seems to me that makes some sense. And I hope that's one of the things that starts to take root. So.
Thank you, Montgomery County Commissioner Dan Foley. I'm jumping in here to remind everyone that this is Facing the Mortgage Crisis, the Next Steps. This is a program in partnership between the Dayton Daily News, Think TV, and WYSO Public Radio. We are on location at the Cox Ohio Media Center in Dayton, Ohio. I'm Kevin Riley, editor of the Dayton Daily News. Our panel once again consists of Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, Alfred Patterson, Community Outreach Specialist for County Corp and the Local Home Saver Program, and Dan Foley, Montgomery County Commissioner. Our media representatives are Ken McCall of the Dayton Daily News and Emily McCord of WYSO. Now we have another citizen story from Stephanie Evans. Ms. Evans is a counselor for County Corp, but she's here to explain what she sees in her neighborhood.
Good evening. My name is Stephanie Evans, and I won my home through the City of Dayton's Urban Homestead Program in 1987. As a single mother of six and just getting off on my feet after being on welfare for 14 years, this was like a dream come true for me. Over the years, I watched my property value slowly increase, and I began to feel as though I was building a foundation for my family. But now I'm beginning to wonder what's going to happen next. Our property values are upside down, and with each new empty house in our neighborhood and the new bargain sales that the banks have going from the foreclosures, I lose value in my property with each one. I really need to paint the exterior of my home right now. But with the way the economy is, I have no equity available to finance materials, let alone finance the labor. I would really like to see things change. I live in a Dayton View historic neighborhood, and Governor Cox used to live there as a child. And Dayton is filled with many homes that are 100 years old or more, beautiful homes that have been there and sustained families for years. But this issue is more than about our history. This is about the spirit of people like Governor Cox, people who wanted to see our area grow and prosper. So what I'd like to also see is that we have ways for people in our neighborhoods to be able to do the maintenance. I need to do this maintenance to help maintain my home as new families move in and our property values start to increase again. But we have no means of doing that. There are certain guidelines and regulations that a historic neighborhood is required to adhere to, yet they have nothing available for us to help do that. People may remember in the past of hearing how neighbors have helped each other by doing paint parties and rent parties and even barn raisings. There's always been a neighbor-to-neighbor value here in Ohio and across the country as we settled everything. And I would like to see those things happen again. We're not looking for a handout. We're looking for a hand up.
Thank you, Ms. Evans. And our next question comes from Ken McCall of the Dayton Daily News.
My question is Commissioner Foley. There's no doubt, as Ms. Evans' story illustrates, that vacant and foreclosed properties are causing are dragging down values in neighborhoods across the region. As I'm sure you know, a recent study found that an estimated 36,000 housing units are currently vacant in Montgomery County alone, and that could go up to 48,000 by 2013. Now, the county and some other governments have gotten some money. I think it's $14 million so far in Neighborhood Stabilization Program funds, federal stimulus money or related to it, that will help go to address vacant and foreclosed properties that are hurting these neighborhoods. And you've applied for another $60 million more. So the question is, will that be enough to stem this tide of vacancies and foreclosures? And what can the county and the region do if you don't get the additional funds?
Yeah, I think the answer is I don't think it's going to be enough. I mean, I think this is a slog that we are going to have to work through for many years to really turn these neighborhoods around. I can tell you with the neighborhood dollars that come from the federal government, the county is using that money to identify some of those neighborhoods that are kind of on the edge. For example, there's a Fort McKinley neighborhood up in Harrison Township that there's a focus for some of those dollars on, saying, okay, this neighborhood has experienced some foreclosure problems, but we believe that with some infusion of some capital, we can buy some properties and renovate some homes, and we can maybe turn this neighborhood around. We're also using some of that money for our homeless prevention initiative. that it's a 10-year campaign to end homelessness in Montgomery County. The city is using a lot of their neighborhood stimulus dollars to tear down properties. There are a lot of properties, you know, in the core urban neighborhoods that are to the point where they're beyond repair, and so that's the city's focus. Do I believe that the money that the city and the county are getting for this initiative is enough to stem the tide? I do not. I think it's going to be helpful. I'm hopeful that it can be. We can look back, and I mean, I'm optimistic. We can look back and say that money is going to be well spent and well used. But it's just a piece of the puzzle.
Thank you, Montgomery County Commissioner Dan Foley. I don't know if another member of our panel wants to take a stab at Ken's question.
Well, I mean, the funding that the local folks are trying to put to the best use right now is the Neighborhood Stabilization Program is what it's called. This is a short-term program, meaning that we've had two rounds from the federal government. But as Commissioner Foley points out, this is a long-term issue. Ohio didn't, unlike California and Nevada and Florida, the foreclosure problem didn't suddenly hit us. We've been experiencing this for many, many years. And the damage that it's done to our communities is vast. Dayton is not alone. Cleveland, believe it or not, has a much worse problem with vacant and abandoned property than you do here in Dayton, if it makes you feel any better. But it's going to take a long-term commitment from the federal government and from the state. The state can help with this issue. In fact, in House Bill 3, one of the other provisions is that if we could get this fee imposed on the servicers to disincentivize them to file a foreclosure, the money generated from that fee could be used to help prevent foreclosures, but also be used to address vacant and abandoned property. And that could generate $30 to $40 million every year. That's just from the state. And that money would come back to the county, and also the state would keep a pot to do some of its own funding for those purposes. So that, I mean, it's not going to be enough to turn it around overnight, but we have to get at it, or the problems will just escalate faster. I mean, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to use some of the funds to demolish properties, because I think we have to look at this issue realistically. Not all of these homes are going to be brought back, but vacant and abandoned property that's left to deteriorate on its own, often bank-owned and neglected by the banks, this property is an eyesore. It drags down neighbors' property values, and I think in some ways, or at least in some cases, the best solution is to demolish it. And we could always use more green space. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to create an empty lot.
Thank you. That was Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Our next question comes from Emily McCord of WYSO.
I'd like to direct this question again to Mr. Foley. I'm curious, someone like Stephanie, what she can do right now. Is there money available in the Neighborhood Stabilization Program or other stimulus funding that, for example, if she wants to paint her house, to improve her house and make that house, you know, have a ripple effect across the neighborhood of a beacon and things that, you know, other people can look at and it'll raise the property value of the houses surrounding it. But she can't do that because she doesn't have that money right now. Is there something available to someone like Stephanie who has a place that she's investing in, she's living in for her life, that she wants to do it? And I guess also sort of as a follow-up to that, who's responsible for these vacant properties and the neighbor to her that has a complete, you know, overgrown weeds and what's going on there? Who's responsible for cleaning up that mess? Is it a neighbor or is the city doing that?
Well, I'm assuming that somebody still is the owner of that property. And, you know, I don't know the number of vacant properties. Ken, I don't know if you mentioned the number, but...
It was 36,000.
36,000.
In Montgomery County.
Montgomery County. So there's still, you know, unless the property has gone into foreclosure or the bank has taken a property back, there's still an owner of that property. So I think in a truest sense of the word, an owner is responsible. But obviously, in a case where you know you see neglectful properties and nobody's doing anything about it, I know it's common if there's a vacant lot and the weeds grow up a few feet after a certain amount of time, that can be put on somebody's property tax bill, right? But again, if there's nobody who's going to pay the property taxes, then where are you at? It's a difficult issue, and it's not a new issue. And I, the first part of your question, Emily, was who can Stephanie go to? I wrote down a few agencies in the community who are involved in this kind of work. I have to admit to you, I don't have an answer as to which agency or if any of those agencies can help. And I have a feeling Stephanie's probably made a lot of phone calls or inquired in a lot of places. And I think you're right. I think, you know, if you have somebody who's investing in their property and they're a good neighbor, it's a frustrating thing, right? Because if we're talking about rebuilding neighborhoods, this is probably one way to do it. And unfortunately, I don't have I wish I could give a better answer, but I don't have one. I don't know, and maybe Bill or Alfred could tell, but I don't know if stimulus dollars can be used for that purpose. I've not heard that it can. But I'm always willing to check into that, at least on our end. And just so you know, there are two pots of stimulus money. The city has stimulus money for the city, and so they received an allocation. And the county also received a separate allocation for the jurisdictions who are not entitled on their own to those funds. So we're kind of a pass-through for some of those other areas. But I mean, I'd be willing to look into it for you as well. Okay.
Thank you. That was County Commissioner Dan Foley. It sounds like maybe Ms. Evans would like the follow-up. So go ahead, step up to the mic and have at him.
Thank you very much. What I wanted to say was there are volunteer groups that will help the elderly and disabled, but there is absolutely nothing out there for what we call the working poor. Anyone who is above 50% of the median income or and above has very rough time getting any assistance from anywhere. So it really does come down to neighbors helping neighbors. And if there were some way to put together a volunteer group of people that would help a neighbor do what needs to be done. As I mentioned before, such things as barn raisings, paint parties, rent parties that used to happen years ago, that would be a great thing in the neighborhood, and we just don't have the capacity yet to put those volunteers together or find the funding for materials to help people who can't do all of it.
Emily McCord of WYSO.
I do have a follow-up, again, for Mr. Foley. You've mentioned a couple times that you really think that the answer is going to have to lie in what the federal government is doing to really get things moving. What is the city of Dayton doing and Montgomery County to best position us with the state and with the federal levels to get our story out there?
Well, I can tell you, so we talk about what has to happen at the federal level, and I think the answer I could tell you is advocacy from an elected official standpoint, advocacy from from a member of the community standpoint. What are a couple of the pieces of that? And I think Alfred and Bill could add to this, but I don't begrudge a bank for making a profit. I don't think anybody in this room begrudges a bank for making a profit, right? But what we've seen is a system where products that have been developed that have harmed people in our community. It is inconceivable to me that half of the civil cases in Montgomery County Common Police Court, or half of the cases in Montgomery County Common Police Court, half the civil cases are foreclosure cases. And that, as Bill suggested, that's not just Dayton. But if you're asking me what would I do, we have to advocate with the federal government to do a couple things. First, overall, you have to say, look, if we're going to develop financial products, you have to balance financial innovation with the impact on people. We've not done that, and that's what a big cause of this problem is. I personally support the development of a consumer finance protection agency. President Obama has talked about this, an agency that would almost, and I'm putting my own words on this, would almost test drive financial products, so that you could figure out whether or not a product is going to be one that will pass the smell test. I also advocate another thing, and that is that if AIG, right, this big company that was a big cause of the financial meltdown, there was a report later that said that this company was broken up into little pieces, and there was not one regulator for that company. The state insurance commissioner in New York figured out that he regulated 1% of the company, and then you had about 30 other people who represented another percent, and they never talked to each other. And so these are some of the things. Nobody here begrudges a bank from making a reasonable profit. And I want to say one last thing because it makes you realize this is a multi-tiered issue. Consumers, I think, have to change, too. I mean, we are in a point now where we have taken a lot of money out of our houses because of the products, but also because of our practices. And I think this whole notion of financial education is something that's important. Now, I was at the supermarket one time. I was buying milk, and I paid for my milk, and the receipt came out, and there was a MasterCard application at the bottom of it. And I remember thinking to myself, that's probably not a great idea that I could get a credit card when I'm picking up my milk. So, I mean, I'm talking this whole notion of financial education has to also be backed up by the fact that we also need to change our ways a little bit. We need to save some more money. So.
Plan that the city of Dayton is sort of working on to kind of position themselves to help implement that, whatever Dayton needs, and knowing what we need, and then finding a way to advocate that up the chain.
Well, plan would probably be too strong a word. I can tell you that from my standpoint, my personal opinion, I'm going to work to support this consumer agency that I think will add more federal regulation and federal support for financial products that don't harm people, you know? So I think that's probably the simplest and truest way that I can answer it on my own.
Thank you. That was Montgomery County Commissioner Dan Foley. Next, we have a question from one of our citizens here. Please give us your name and where you're from.
Harry Weiner from Kettering, Ohio. And Mr. Foley, just before, led into my question. How many people are underwater because of using home equity loans for living expenses?
Bill Faith knows that answer.
I do know that answer. Well, I know part of the answer. Right now, of all the homeowners that have a mortgage in Ohio, 46% of them are underwater. 46%. Just think about that. They're either, and that means they owe more on their home than the home is worth, or they're almost there, within 5%. Now, some of that's due to what you say. People take out, they use their home equity like a piggy bank. They go buy groceries and tennis shoes. But in some cases, they're kind of stuck. They've been downsized in their work. They've lost their job. They're unemployed. So living on home equity may not be the greatest choice, but it may be one of the only choices they really have. But this underwaterness is also due to the fact that many of these loans, when they were brokered by a mortgage broker originally, they were overappraised. You could call it appraisal fraud, which is what I would hope we would call it. But it's appraisal inflation. They jacked up the value of that home to qualify the person for the mortgage, when a better response might have been, you can't really afford that mortgage, right? I mean, so we part of, the problem we have is that our financial system did not regulate itself. And it goes back to Commissioner Foley's point, that, we have all these regulators, the Federal Reserve, the Comptroller of the Currency, the FDIC, the Office of Thrift Supervision, and none of them have the mission of protecting consumers. Not one of them. I mean, we do better protecting consumers in a car purchase. We have an agency responsible to make sure that car is safe. We have no agency that's responsible for assuring that the financial products that are peddled on us by the banks and other lenders, in fact, are safe for consumers. And that's what President Obama has proposed, what the Banking Committee in the House and the Senate are currently debating. And all the lending community, perhaps not surprisingly, but the mortgage bankers and the big banks have all opposed the creation of this agency. So whether or not that will proceed is in question right now. They're going to take it up after the break. And I think that goes back to Commissioner Foley's point about the importance of advocacy. We're pushing for this. he's pushing for this. Our citizens need to push for it. That we, you know, our consumers deserve to have protection, particularly the more complicated these financial transactions have gotten to be, the more we deserve to have protection to make sure these products are safe.
Thank you. That was Bill Faith of the Ohio Coalition on Homelessness and Housing. Ken McCall of the Dayton Daily News has a question for one of our panelists.
I'd like to try to get us to look into the future just a little bit. So I'll start with you, Mr. Faith, with this, and I'd be interested in what anyone has to say. There seems to be sort of an interesting paradox in some of the numbers that have been coming out recently. And an analysis that we just did, this newspaper just did, of foreclosures and sheriff sales of foreclosed properties showed that in Montgomery County, those numbers are actually down for the first 6 months of this year. Foreclosure filings are down 5%. Sheriff sales are down 20%. So that seems like it might be a good thing. But today, the Mortgage Bankers Association came out with a report that said the number of people in Ohio, mortgage holders in Ohio who are in trouble with their mortgage or in foreclosure is up to 14%, which I guess is 1 in 7 of all mortgage holders in Ohio. So what's going on here? Could this be because some of the lenders are holding off a little bit? The mortgage lenders are holding off to see how the whole federal policy shakes out? Are banks just walking away? Or are things getting better?
Very good question. Something we were looking at earlier today when this Mortgage Bankers report first came out. And we got to realize in the first quarter of this year, the number was 13% of our homeowners were in trouble, meaning that they're 30 days or more late on their mortgage or are already in foreclosure. That number went up in the second quarter to 14.3%, which is a very significant increase. So the pipeline on delinquencies is what we usually look at as the best predictor for future foreclosures, right? If people get 60, 90 days late, it's pretty likely they're going to head to foreclosure. What we have seen is that this spring there was a lot of activity. Some banks said we're having a foreclosure moratorium, for 2 weeks. Some banks held off until they geared up for the Obama plan. But when you look at what's happened with the Obama plan, which is the best thing we've ever seen from the federal government around this issue, but when you look at what's happened is that the lenders and servicers that signed up for that plan, the best record of any of them is that they're processed about 20% of the homeowners that are eligible. The worst record is even banks that we know, like National City Bank, an Ohio-based lender, their record is 0%. They've not processed, I think they did 6 cases in the entire country that they've processed through this plan. So their record is dismal in terms of taking advantage of the tools the Obama administration is trying to provide, which includes $75 billion that they've set aside as incentives for servicers to do loan modifications for borrowers as opposed to proceed with foreclosure. So there was a lot of activity, there has been over the last few months, around what was going to happen with that. That may have slowed some foreclosure filings. But the other thing that we're seeing, and I don't have numbers on this yet, but is that banks are walking away, or the servicers walking away, meaning that they file a foreclosure. They get a default judgment in court. So if foreclosure's been processed, that homeowner thinks they've lost their home, because the court said, ruled in favor of the bank. But then they don't go to sheriff sale. So a sheriff sale gets scheduled, and the bank or the lender or the servicer pulls that property from going to sale. That creates an entire legal limbo for that property. Technically, the property owner, the homeowner, is still the owner of record. but it's in the hands of the bank as to what happens for the future of that property. And that creates that, if that escalates, and we've seen it escalate in many cities, that's going to create future headaches for our local officials as they try to sort out what they're going to do with that property.
Thank you, Mr. Faith. We are down to just a couple minutes here, and I'm going to ask Alfred Patterson of the Local Home Standard Program a question that I'd like him to recognize we have very little time to answer, and it's this. You know, there are many people out there who have no trouble paying their mortgage, aren't worried about foreclosure, and often you'll hear the opinion that, well, gosh, these people got mixed up in the wrong thing, and they tried to buy too much house. What do you say to people who have that attitude based on your experience and why they ought to care about the crisis that some people are in?
Well, to say that someone bought too much house is a simple way to respond when, in fact, you don't want to really be bothered with an issue, or you really don't have an answer to an issue. It's not a question. I mean, everybody pretty much bought too much house. You bought as much house as the bank would qualify you for because you bought your house based on payment. You didn't buy your house based on the fact that in 3 months, GM might do something tricky or NCR might move. You bought your house based on what your next paycheck would allow you to spend on a house payment. So I can appreciate that there are some folks who would step away from any responsibility that they have as a member of the community, but that's short-sighted. And the reality is, whereas you may not be upside down or have an issue with your mortgage, within the next 6 months you may have an issue with some other aspect of your life that the entire community is affected by, or you're affected by how it affects the community. So this issue was not created in a vacuum. It won't be solved in a vacuum. Everyone that owns a home has a vested interest in how we address the foreclosure issue. Everyone that pays a mortgage, everyone that has a home, together we have to resolve this. You can't step out of the ring and say it doesn't affect me.
Thank you. Alfred Patterson, Community Outreach Specialist for the Local Home Saver Program. We've done some good work here tonight. We haven't just talked about the mortgage crisis. We've identified some concrete action that can help and some ideas to work on. It's clear we aren't going to really emerge from this crisis without a lot of hard work. I want to thank Emily McCord of WISO and Ken McCall of the Dayton Daily News. Also, a big thank you to our panel, Bill Faith, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, Alfred Patterson, Community Outreach Specialist for County Corp and its Local Home Saver Program, and Dan Foley, Montgomery County Commissioner. Thanks to WISO, Think TV, and the Dayton Daily News. This is a presentation of WISO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, a broadcast service of Antioch University. Facing the Mortgage Crisis, the Next Steps has been made possible in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and with assistance from the Ohio Channel. For information or help on mortgage issues, call the United Way at 211 or visit our websites, DaytonDailyNews.com, ThinkTV.org, and WISO.org. Thank you for joining us tonight.
This program was recorded at the Cox, Ohio Media Center in Dayton, Ohio on Thursday evening, August the 20th. The host was Kevin Riley of the Dayton Daily News.